curled up against him, my chest pressing against his back, our breathing synchronized, our feet intertwined. This is how we have slept for over 5,000 nights. But now we sleep in different rooms. By day, we dance the 2 meter zigzag. Hugs, caresses, kisses are daily shorthand, now forbidden. Stay away from me, my new term of endearment. Constantly coughing, feeling achy and unwell, I am terrified that if I get too close to my husband, I will infect him. So I keep my distance. This is March the 31st, 2020, and along with 2.5 billion other people, a third of the world's population, my household is in lockdown. With so many people stuck at home, condemned to working remotely, if one still had a job, that is, not allowed to visit friends or loved ones, getting outside once a day, if at all, socially distancing, quarantining, and self-isolating, it was inevitable that feelings of loneliness and isolation soared. Just 2 days into lockdown, my best friend messages, "The isolation is driving me potty." On day 4, my 82-year-old father WhatsApps, "I wandered lonely as a cloud." Across the globe, staff manning emotional health helplines reported not only massive spikes in caller volume within days of mandatory social distancing, but also that significant numbers were from people suffering loneliness. "My mum won't hug me or get very close to me," one distraught child confided to a volunteer at the UK helpline Childline. In Germany, where by mid-March helplines were taking 50% more calls than usual, one psychologist working the phones noted that most callers are more afraid of loneliness than getting infected. Yet the lonely century did not begin in the first quarter of 2020. By the time COVID-19 struck, many of us had already been feeling lonely, isolated, and atomized for a considerable amount of time. Why we became so lonely, and what we must do to reconnect, is what this book is about. September 24th, 2019. I am waiting, seated at the window, my back against the pretty in pink wall. My phone pings. It's Brittany. She's running a few minutes late. "No worries," I message back. Cool choice of place. And it is. The effortlessly beautiful, gazelle-like clientele with their fashion model portfolios under their arms hint at just how hip Chacha Matcha in Manhattan's NoHo district feels. A few beats later, she arrives. Long-limbed, athletic, her smile widens as scanning the room I come into her gaze. "Hey, love your dress," she says. At $40 an hour, I'd expect no less. For Brittany is the friend I have rented for the afternoon from a company called Rent-A-Friend. Founded by New Jersey entrepreneur Scott Rosenbaum, who had seen the concept take off in Japan, now operating in dozens of countries across the world, its website has over 620,000 platonic friends for hire. This wasn't the career path Brittany, a 23-year-old small-town Floridian, had intended when she'd won her place at Brown. Yet having been unable to secure a job in environmental science, the subject she had majored in at university, and anxious about her levels of student debt, she explains her decision to rent out her company as a pragmatic one, her emotional labour as just another monetizable string to her bow. When she's not renting herself out, on average she does so a few times a week, she helps startups with their social media postings and offers executive assistance services via TaskRabbit.